It is Locked On Jazz for the 20th of December. Clutch play, and more clutch play for the Utah Jazz. We'll break down what they're doing so well late in the game, how brilliant they were last night against Atlanta, and then it's a points game Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way more fun to be a Jazz fan. Jazz win in Atlanta last night, a game that went, I think, as you probably would have anticipated. Atlanta coming off a dreadful loss to the New York Knicks, completely embarrassed, and then came to play. Lloyd Pierce turning the starting lineup over to their young kids, and then Trae Young's really good. The Jazz did a heck of a good job on Trae Young, and the Jazz then had a bad shooting night, and it was pretty prime for the Jazz to get beat last night. But they didn't, and that's what good basketball teams do. The Jazz took the fourth quarter of last night's game and just outscored the Hawks 28-22, outscored him down the clutch, and despite 6 of 24 from shooting from 3, and as we've talked about a lot, since the Jazz have a tendency to turn the ball over and the Jazz don't offensive rebound, if you're not doing everything else perfectly, it gets really hard. And that's just kind of, I think, what we're going to have to understand all year long unless we make some lineup changes. We're not offensive rebounding. I think we had 6 of them last night. And then we do have a tendency to turn the ball over until late in the game when we don't turn it over anymore. I think we're, one of the best teams late. We'll talk about that with the ball in our hands. So we had 18 turnovers and only had we did have last night. We had 13 offensive rebounds. So that's a bigger step forward. That may have been what saved us last night. Was our offensive rebounding rate of 27.7%, which is high for us. That from a big picture, that probably kept us in the game last night. You had 4, Rudy had, Joe had 4 offensive rebounds last night. Joe ended up with 7 rebounds, Bogdanovich with 9, O'Neal with 7. These guys are really committed to the glass. Let's walk through the end of this game, because this is, this is where good teams win games. It's tied at or close to tied late in the ball game, and Donovan just gets special. There are 4 guys in the NBA right now that are scoring more points than minutes played in the clutch. And they are Kyrie Irving, James Harden, Joel Embiid, and Donovan Mitchell. That's pretty outstanding. And then I think, we've gotten used to him, but he's in his 3rd year, right? Trae Young last night, really good player, and it seems like Donovan's so much older than he is. Fact of the matter is, he's not, right? Donovan is he's older, I think. He's played one more year of college also, but he's only played one more NBA year. He's in his 3rd year. Trae Young's in his 2nd. The talking point in Atlanta is, well, it's such a young team, and it is. All those are real. But so is Donovan. 6 minutes left. Jazz are down 1. They sub Donovan in. He goes right to work. Comes off a nice low pick and roll, and he beats everyone in this process. He beats Hunter. He beats Reddish. He beats Kevin Huerter. He beats Trae Young. It's interesting, just a side note, Jeremy Brunner does our TV producing, and he'll share every now, he'll go back through and put all the highlights together. And he says it's interesting that every now and then you'll see, against Minnesota, he's like, wow, Robert Covington thought of as a great defense player, but boy, he is on the wrong side of just about every highlight tonight. And last night he said, boy, Trae Young sure was on the wrong side of a lot of highlights. Now that's the issue with Trae Young. He's awfully small. But so Donovan comes off a beautiful play, kept the dribble alive, low pick from Rudy, gets a little 11-foot mid-ranger, hits it. Then next play down, he does the spite of spin and beats Kevin Huerter, and the Jazz are, and then Huerter answers with a 3. He's a nice player. And, it's tied at 99. We're into clutch time. Donovan misses a shot. Bogdanovich misses a shot. So you've scored on two of your last four possessions. And then Donovan goes to work. 101-100. Beautiful play up top. The Jazz are running a lot of, we talked about this a little bit in postcast last night, but the Jazz end up running a similar play a lot of the times with little variations off it. The play you're most often seeing late in the game from the Jazz is Donovan Mitchell with the ball up top. Bojan Bogdanovic comes in. He doesn't quite set the pick. And somebody last night on postcast wanted to know why doesn't he? Well, you actually don't want him to. You're either going to force him to switch or you're running him off like a rub or a peel or a just almost a contact where you're running him close enough that you want to make the defenders have to think about it. So is Bogdanovich setting a pick? Am I switching? Because they're probably going to switch a Bogdanovich-Mitchell pick and roll. It's generally thought of probably pretty close to a small, small pick and roll. So what you end up doing is, as a defensive player, Bogdanovich sprinting right at Donovan, and he's flaring out for a straightaway three. Donovan's usually a little bit off to the angle right on this play. And if you're guarding Bogdanovich's man, when Bogdanovich runs straight and is next to Donovan's man, what do? Are you staying with Bogdanovich? Are you switching? And if Donovan goes right at the right time, then that guy has to make that decision. And he actually has to be running, if you think of about Donovan being a little bit high on the right-hand side and Bogdanovich is running from the right side toward the left to the middle of the floor, the guy trailing Bogdanovich has to be running at basically full speed. If he's going to switch, he has to stop on a dime, change directions, and catch Donovan on his move, which is incredibly difficult. If they do switch and they don't switch right, Bogdanovich ends up wide open because he's going with speed. Donovan's standing still, and the guy who's guarding Donovan, now it's switched to Bogdanovich, has to catch Bogdanovich. That's how he got the open three. He happened to miss it with 4:12 left. But this is an incredibly difficult play to guard when you have two bona fide scorers who can score from all three levels in both circumstances, and the Jazz are running it really, really well. The Jazz ideal situation is to have the right defender switching on to Donovan or switching on to Bogey and letting them go to work. And so the Hawks will sit back, and if Trae Young wouldn't be defending, if Trae Young's on Royce O'Neal, then you might have Royce O'Neal come and set a pick. It's a little bit of what the Jazz did. They ran that on the play before. Bogdanovich runs off Donovan. And then as Donovan's coming downhill, Joe Ingles came to set another pick, which forced Kevin Huerter, who's not a particularly good defensive player, to guard Donovan Mitchell. But so the Jazz are running, this, and that's actually, this is what happened at the 101-99 or maybe the 103-101 play, where the Jazz are running this kind of action. This is where Quinn, builds these plays, and there's little variations off it. And even if you kind of know what's coming, it's a pretty fabulous play. It's pretty difficult to defend. And the Jazz, we're beginning to see Bogdanovich and Mitchell have a little relationship there and understand each other in that stretch. And I think that's what's most interesting. So the Jazz then take the 105-101 lead when Donovan scores again. Now it slows down a little bit. Donovan turns it over. Royce commits a turnover, which is unusual. The Jazz don't usually turn the ball over late. And this is where we're showing some versatility. Quinn then runs a Joe Ingles, Rudy Gobert pick and roll, suddenly involving different, so now you've got everyone else is differently involved, and Joe's able to take the left-hand drive, do his ball fake, lay it up and in. Great shot of Dante on the bench on the TV broadcast doing the fake and the layup. So you see the various different things that the Jazz are able to do in clutch time and the way that they've been playing that. And we'll look and see here in a second of how good they are and what they've been able to do in the clutch. But we saw it last night. And there's two things I don't want to neglect in that conversation. We'll get to them in just a second. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street, also located in Linden and in Logan. The Hyundai lineup is just incredible. The Palisade is the new 8-seater. It's getting rave reviews. I've been driving the Santa Fe and frankly bought the old Santa Fe a few years ago for my son, and we have been wildly pleased. The Tucson and the Kona are the next two in the SUV lab. The Kona is a small, zippy one, similar to the Subaru Crosstrek, and has been an absolutely big hit. It's fun. I drove it for a while. It's small, zippy, great for the single person. And the two sedans are the Elantra as well as the Sonata. More importantly, the thing about Hyundai is just all the features you get for your dollar. So if you're in the market shopping for a car right now, make sure you at least stop by Murdoch Hyundai in Linden, Logan, or in Salt Lake City and look at what you can get for your money. And then you can decide whether you like it or not. Before you do stop by, though, please email me at dlock09@gmail.com, and then I will call ahead and make sure that they're prepared for you. You know who to ask for, and you get treated like the Locked On Jazz king or queen that you should be treated like. So before you stop by Murdoch Hyundai, make sure you email me and let me know. But if you're in the market for a car this holiday season, take a moment and take a look at the Hyundai and see what you can get for the incredible value on your dollar. Email me again. It's DLock, DLOCKE09@gmail.com. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street, Logan, and in Linden. You know, for all the two great offensive plays, there are two things that have to be mentioned in here. Royce O'Neal makes two absolutely incredible defensive plays late last night. Absolutely amazing. One, there's a fast break. Jabari Parker's Trae Young gets in the lane. Jabari Parker's coming down the baseline. Royce Young switches over and strips it away from Jabari for the steal. And then after Donovan commits a really poor turnover, an above-the-break turnover, it should be catastrophic, allowing points on the other side, Royce O'Neal steals it from Cam Reddish and then steps out of bounds, takes an extra step and ends up out of bounds. Irrelevant at that point. I mean, it would have been incredible if he'd stolen the ball, but what it also does is puts them back in the half court and takes away their play. Rudy's defense late in the game last night was remarkable as well. There's one play where going into the lane, Trae Young goes up and has to alter his floater to a height that I'm not sure he ever has. Trae Young's floater is one of the best shots in the league. He's super good at it. And what happens instead is that Rudy Gobert steps out, forces that floater up high and offbeat. The Jazz allowed way too many shots at the rim last night overall. But at the same time, the Jazz got a million shots at the rim last night. Atlanta, as we talked about on the radio broadcast last night, allows 40% of their defensive shots at the rim, and the Jazz were able to get there. Last night was the Jazz 15th best offensive performance of the year, 10th best defensive performance, defensive rating below 100. First time we've done that since the Philadelphia 76er game, and only the third time we've done that since 20th of November. So that's a great sign. The last two games the Jazz defense has, after having a pretty bad stretch, has looked a little bit better. Overall, the offense has put together five of the Jazz last six games have been top 15 offensive performances in the season. So just little tiny things, lesser opponents, sure, but little tiny things beginning to come together for this team and look considerably better. The clutch play is pretty awesome. Going into last night, the Jazz were the third best team in the NBA taking care of the ball in the clutch. Right now, for the season, I mentioned Donovan, one of four guys who are actually scoring more points than minutes played in the clutch. Donovan has scored 60 points in 57 minutes in clutch play. His efficiency is loaded because of his scoring the free throw line. He's taken 22 free throws and made 29 of them, or taken 29, made 22. The Jazz this year are 12-5 in the clutch. Remember last year they were good in the clutch if Rubio was off the floor. Bad if Rubio was on the floor, if you recall, last year. So, and it was just if he didn't have the ball in his hands, he's unguarded, and then he was a little prohibitive. The Jazz last year were 7-14 when Rubio was on the floor. They were 15-17 for the season, so they were 8-3 when he was off the floor. So you take the eight. And now clutch numbers, frankly, have a lot of noise. Don't. 1 year good clutch doesn't usually lead to another, but that's at least interesting. The Jazz are 20-8 over the last 2 years in games within 5 points in the final 5 minutes that do not involve Ricky Rubio. Bojan has been great, 44% from the field, 46% from three. Rudy 7 of 8 from the field, making all the plays needed. Royce's, that three that Royce missed last night, the first clutch shot he's missed all season long. If you look at it, the Jazz now have the second most amount of clutch wins in the league at 12. Philadelphia's got 13. They're 13-7 in those circumstances. The Jazz are 12-5. The best winning percentage in the league are the Lakers, the Bucks, the Heat, and the Jazz. The Heat are 8-3 in the clutch. The Lakers are 12-3. The Bucks are 10-3 in the clutch. And if you go to some of the advanced metrics, it's pretty offensively led by Donovan. The Jazz are the 11th best offensive team in the clutch and by far one of the best defensive teams. They are tied with Milwaukee for the best defensive team with a defensive rating of an 84. That's a little nerve-wracking in the sense that that just can't last. It seems unlikely that you can continue this number at that rate. What the Jazz have, opponents are shooting 33% and 26% from three in the clutch. So right now it's credited to great defense, but do understand that at some point opponent shots are going to fall late in games, and that'll give us probably even things out a little bit, maybe not. Denver went through a whole year where teams never made the those looks. The Jazz are the fourth best team in the league now taking care of the ball late in the game. For a team that has a high turnover rate during the rest of the year, they're really key there. They go to the free throw line the third most amount of any team in the league late in games. That could be just the team's foul sometimes in these circumstances. For a pretty good shooting team, we're the eighth best shooting team in the league. And then, you know, we really are not an offensive rebounding team, so we don't do it a lot there. From a defensive standpoint, teams are shooting effective field goal percentage of 38% against us. The Lakers have the best. We have not fouled. We're the third best team at fouling. We're the 12th best team at forcing turnovers, and then our defensive rebounding has actually been only okay, 13th in the league, despite how great it's been during the year. The defensive rebounding last night was just fabulous. Really impressive in gang defensive rebounding late in the game. Rudy's been great. He has a career-high defensive rebounding rate, but the Jazz as a team have been terrific at that as well. It's a Friday, so it's a points gained Friday. You know, one other note on that game, you know, the bench was an issue again, right? There's just not a lot to be said there. Jeff Green minus 11 and 16 minutes. George Niang minus 12 and 18 minutes. Ed Davis minus 11 and 11 minutes. You know, I at some point you have to probably start making some adjustments in this regard to try something new. I don't know what other rotations the Jazz can use without Mike Conley. Bogdanovich played 37 minutes. Joe Ingles played 36. Rudy Gobert played 37. Donovan played 36. I mean, Quinn is rolling that group out there as much as he can. Emmanuel Mudiay has been fairly solid. He's really struggling at the rim all of a sudden. He did not have earlier in the year. Mudiay had gotten much better at the rim. In fact, he started the year shooting, I think, 21 of 33 at the rim, and it was a very different feel than what he'd had before in his career. That was an area, you know, I think we've talked about it a lot, where he just, you know, he just did not shoot the ball well at the rim. And it's prohibitive to his success because he's so powerful and such a has such an incredible ability to get to the basket. And he just doesn't have a lot of lift around the basket, despite being, you know, such a quick athlete with amazing feet and all these other things. Lift is just not in his athletic skills. And so he is now, since the month of December, last night they only counted one of his four shots as rim shots. So it's a little differently than I suspected, but he's now two of his last nine at the rim. And then last night he was 0-for-3 in the floater zone, though those were obviously close. In that same time period, he's one of his last nine in the paint. So he's three of his last 19 in the paint, which is, you know, that's causing him to not shoot as well. I think he's playing terrifically well, though, from a team standpoint and those kind of things. Got another 20 minutes. Quinn clearly thinks so, too, because he's playing him 20 minutes a night. Points gained, hottest players in the NBA over the last 10 games and for the season, plus a little thought on one or two of last night's ball games. When we continue, it's Locked On Jazz. Remember, Friday edition of Locked On NBA is always fun with Anthony Irwin and Adam Modis, but also remember that we have the Rejecting the Screen Thursday going ISO, and then Hollinger and Duncan for the week if you haven't grabbed that. So a bunch of national shows for you here on Locked On, the Locked On Podcast Network. Let's go to our, well, how about the Lakers getting waxed last night by Milwaukee. They made it close and respectable by the end, but the first quarter last night and the fourth quarter, second quarter last night, were the Bucks complete control. Giannis, the Bucks outscored him 42-29 in the second after being up by six, so they were up 19 at the half. Lakers charged back. Anthony Davis, though, goes 11 of 25. He ends up with 36 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. LeBron has a triple-double. Danny Green, I mean, they got a lot out of a lot of guys last night. Their bench was not – they only got 4 points off their bench last night and were 12 of 35 from the field. The Lakers, the Bucks, on the other hand, are just – they're just blowing up the league. Giannis goes 5 of 8 from 3, 34 points. George Hill had 21 last night in 27 minutes. And the crazy night, game of the night, we got on the plane, thought the Rockets were getting blown out. And by the end of the night, the Rockets had beat up on the Lakers. By the way, the Bucks and Lakers offensive rating, defensive rating stuff was kind of right where you'd expect it to be by the end of the night, which was interesting. There was nothing too out of units. But Houston goes into L.A. and wins last night against the Clippers. Russell Westbrook had 40, all sorts of shenanigans again. The Rockets outscored the Clippers last night 68-48 in the second half. All right, let's go to our points gained. Let's find out who the hot. Let's start with the 10 last 10 games, who the hottest players in the NBA are. I have not, I've got the data, but I'm going to learn right when you are for the first time. I think I see something wrong on my sheet, so hopefully it's not going to cause me a problem. It's not. James Harden is at, there's a chance that somebody on Chicago is having, oh, he's only played two games, though, and taken four shots. All right. James Harden is at 4.9 over the last 10 games. Davis Bertans, Giannis Antetokounmpo at 3.9. Norman Powell at 3.7. How about Toronto losing Norman Powell, Pascal Siakam, and Marc Gasol all on the same day? And all indefinitely. Brandon Clark in Memphis is a 3.5. Ben McLemore in Houston's on fire. Karl-Anthony Towns, 3.4. Anthony Davis, 3.4. Those are new to points gained. 3.4 means that on a given night, with the scoring opportunities that Anthony Davis uses, which seems to be about 24 a night, he's scoring 3.4 points more than the average player in the NBA is doing in the same with the same possessions. Anything over two is absolutely outstanding. For the season, there'll only be about 10 or 11 guys over two that are doing that. And then usually one guy, two guys, or three guys over three. So there's usually about two or three guys over three for a season, about 10 guys over two. And it's a little bit of my premise of why negative players are so difficult, because being positive is less impact than people think. There's less of them. But over a short stretch, you get a bunch. Some interesting names. Ja Morant as a plus three. He's only played in the last five of the last 10 games, but you just don't see rookies like that. Rudy Gobert's a 3.1 recently. Duncan Robinson, so interesting, in Minnesota. He's taking 83% of his shots as three-point shots. He's making 48% of them. He doesn't do anything but shoot threes, never goes to the line, never shoots a two. He has been incredibly efficient. Trae Young has been too. Grayson Allen, having only played five of the last 10 games, but is a plus 2.7. Good for him. Evan Fournier, who we saw, is a 2.5, and I'm skipping a lot of players in that group. Let's see who the coldest guys in the NBA are, and then we'll look at Utah. The coldest players in the NBA, Thomas Bryant in Ricky Rubio is the coldest player in the NBA right now at minus 3.4. I'm looking to some of these guys just haven't played many games. Blake Griffin, Kendrick Williams, Jay Crowder, Kobe White, D'Angelo Russell, R.J. Barrett, Jarrett Culver, Jordan Poole, Tyler Hero cooled off. Interesting. We'll see him at the end of the week. Lou Williams, Kyle Kuzma, all falling into this bottom. Torian Prince, Mike Conley was there for his five games. Terry Rozier, who we'll see here in Charlotte after that. From a Jazz standpoint, let's find out which Jazz players are hot, which players are cold. We kind of know instinctually, but sometimes it reveals to us someone's a little hotter or a little colder than we think. Let's find out. You want as many guys as positive as you can get. Rudy's a 3.1. Joe Ingles is 1.4. Bogdanovich is 1.3. George Niang is a 0.3. Jeff Green is a minus 0.3. Ed Davis is a minus 0.4. Royce is a minus 0.4. Donovan's a minus 0.7 over the last 10 games. And Emmanuel Mudiay is a minus 1.5 over the last few games. He is going to the free throw line 13%, but takes almost only twos, and just he's shooting 29% over the last 10 games. All right, let's go look at the season. We've done this each week, but I don't suspect that you actually listen every single Friday as much as I'd like you to. Who are the most positively impactful offensive players in the league? And the answer is James Harden at 4.4. which is just an astronomically high number. It's come down a little bit, though. Karl Anthony Towns, 3.9. Giannis, 3.1. So there's our three guys at three. That's exactly kind of how it always is. We have a few more guys over two right now than we usually do. Luka Doncic is at 2.9. Devin Booker, 2.7. Brandon Clark, the rookie at Memphis, at 2.7. Davis Bertans, having an incredible year, 2.7. Rudy Gobert, 2.7. Hassan Whiteside, 2.3. Rashawn Holmes, 2.2. Paul George, 2.1. Mo Wagner, 2.1. Dame Lillard, 2.1. Jared Allen. And then the 2.0s are Duncan Robinson, Mitchell Robinson, Gordon Hayward sitting at a 1.9 overall. So those are the best offensive players in the league so far. The negative players in the league, Jordan Poole is holding to the lowest spot of all. R.J. Barrett, second worst. Dwayne Bacon in Charlotte, third. Jarrett Culver, the rookie in Minnesota, fourth. Cam Reddish, fifth. Kobe White, the rookie in Chicago, sixth. Russell Westbrook, Caris LeVert, who's been injured. Marvin Bagley, who's been injured. See their impact on their team when they come back. Dennis Smith in New York. Ricky Rubio's a minus 2.2. Blake Griffin, Drew Holiday for all the trade talk. Mike Conley would be right there. Kristaps Porzingis, minus 1.8. So he's really not quite hit his stride entirely. And for the Jazz season, take a look, do the sort. And the Jazz season, Rudy's at 2.7. Bogdanovich is at 1.7. Royce is at 0.6. Tony Bradley at 0.5. George Niang at 0.3. Joe Ingles, minus 0.2, but he's rising up. Dante, minus 0.2, and Mudiay, minus 0.2. Donovan, minus 0.3, but has been less recently, as we talked about. Ed Davis, minus 0.4. Jeff Green, minus 0.4. And Mike Conley, minus 1.8. That is your Locked On Jazz today. Thanks very much for tuning in. Super appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back with you next week when we come back on Monday from Miami. And then we'll probably try to get you a Tuesday episode. Take Christmas off. Maybe we'll see what we do on the 20th. Probably come back with you on Friday. Have a great one. Tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On NBA. Have a good one.